Is that how you live, how you value things? We should ask ourselves. And here's where we must be very careful. Loving for Allah must not be selective. It must not be based on personal gain, racial pride, or national interest. It must not favor one person or group over another because of where they were born or how useful they are to us. Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
We are with you. What about you? Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
If you ask me, why do I stand here so unafraid of everything around me? Proudly I would say, I am a Muslim. If you ask her, why does she dress that way, all covered up in a world that gives it all away? Proudly she would say, I am a Muslim.
Islamic laws.
If you ask him, why does he still pray 5 times a day when so many others have strayed? Smiling, he would say, I am a Muslim.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Islamic Laws on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. Assalamu alaikum, Sheikh, and welcome to the program.
Alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. It's a pleasure to have you back in the studio, Sheikh.
Thank you.
You always come and shed light on some of the complicated questions that I ask you normally related to Islamic laws. And we have been discussing some of these Islamic laws of miscellaneous nature for a while now. And let me continue along the same line, if you don't mind. In order to consecrate a piece of land as a mosque, normally we've heard that there is a kind of a special formula that needs to be pronounced, right?
Right.
Isn't that right?
Well, according to His Eminence, Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, of course, a specific verbal declaration, we call it sigha,
mm-hmm.
is not required to be recited in order to consecrate land as a mosque.
Mm-hmm.
It's an act of giving, one-sided act.
Yes.
So, actually, consecration can be accomplished through let's say mu'atat or actional consecration.
Yes.
Like, for example, if a person says that this piece of land should be used as a place for building a mosque,
mm.
then that place becomes a mosque.
Mm.
Okay, and there's no need for reciting any kind of formula. So it's a one-sided thing, you see.
Right.
A canonic prayer is performed on that land. For example, if you establish a jama'at prayer on that piece of land after it is given and specified and
yes.
for to be a piece of land for to be used for building a mosque, then a prayer is performed on that piece. So either before or after construction, this is the opinion of
yes.
His Eminence, then with that intention, it has become a mosque. You know, you offer a prayer, jamaat prayer, or a single or individual prayer on mm-hmm. that. Considering it as a place for mosque, then whether there is any building structure built there or not, it does not, it's not important. That place is consecrated as a place, as a mosque, and it's not necessary to recite any formula.
Mm-hmm, I see.
Right.
And does this same rule apply to Husseinias?
Husseinias, you know, Husseinias does not have the same ruling as the mosque. Of course, Husseinias is a place where you engage in kind of dua, supplications, mourning for Imam Hussein alayhi salatu wasalam, and his.
But they also offer the prayer there, yeah, too.
Of course, you can offer your prayers anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, but then there's an issue which is called waqf. You see, endowment.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay, it may be endowment, a piece of land endowed by the owner. If it is endowed by the owner, then mm-hmm. of course that piece of land or building or structure, whatever, must be used for the same purpose for which it was endowed.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh. Let's take a short break and then we'll be back and continue our program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio. Stay tuned.
The followers of Ayatollah Khomeini can refer to leader.ir/en. In the section Religious Affairs, you can ask your question and receive the answer. In the library section, some of Ayatollah Khomeini's works of jurisprudence are available, including Practical Laws of Islam, Frequently Asked Questions, Comparative Fatwa, and Newly Asked Questions.
Allah, ya Allah, guide me all the way to your Jannah, ya Allah. Let me go astray, cause I need you.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the jurisprudential laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khomeini. Well, Sheikh Javid, we know that when an individual in fact has a wet dream, they have to offer ghusl al-janabah, right?
Yes.
What happens, what if this, in fact, wet dream happens to them while they are, for example, staying or sleeping in a mosque?
Right. Well, such thing might happen, you yes. know.
So what is their duty?
Yeah, if a person experiences a wet dream, and like say he has a nightfall, right?
Yes.
While in a mosque, it is obligatory to leave the mosque immediately upon waking up. When he wakes up and
realizes that
yes, yeah. that he has had a nightfall, then it's necessary to leave the mosque, because it's not permissible to stay in that mosque or to pause there, halt there. So this is because remaining in a mosque while in a state of janabah is prohibited according to Islamic Sharia,
mm-hmm.
and this is the opinion of all scholars. Entering a mosque and staying in a mosque while in the state of janabah is not permissible. So after one leaves and then performs ghusl janabah, he can re-enter the mosque.
Mm-hmm.
And if he has made any part of the mosque najis, impure, it is necessary for that individual or anyone who comes to know that the mosque has been made najis or impure to purify the mosque. It's a random, a very quick, you know, it's a quick an immediate duty that every individual who comes to know that the mosque is impure, made impure by one thing or for one reason or another, then it is necessary and it's a collective duty to purify the mosque. And if one person undertakes to purify the mosque, then other people are relieved of that duty.
If such a case happens,
right?
Does this duty bound, in fact, have to purify himself from the mosque, I mean, like after waking up and the realization, or he has to purify that part of the, for example, the carpet or that part of the mosque that has been, you know, affected,
yes,
all right, by the nightfall.
Yes.
So which one goes first?
He must, takes a priority? He must immediately perform ghusl, because uh-huh. staying in that mosque is not permissible, uh-huh. as in, because he is in the state of janabah.
But if
and then after he leaves the mosque, performs ghusl janabah, and comes back to that mosque enters that mosque and finds that the najasat is still there and that no one has washed that place, because maybe many people
didn't know that. Yes.
They didn't know. So it is wajib, it is obligatory on that individual to wash that part of the najis part of that mosque and make sure that no najasa is there, because people will offer prayers on that in that place.
Exactly, that's my point. So yes. Shouldn't that najis part in fact be removed first? Because if the same thing happens, or the scenario happens here, and if he leaves the mosque for his own purification, doing or offering the ghusl janabah, then that najis part might be spread to the other parts of the mosque, basically, because the other mosque goers basically find themselves, for example, affected by it while they don't know whether this part was najis. So they do it unintentionally, of course.
Right. So the solution is that he should inform someone else. He should inform people and the mosque that this part of the carpet is najis. No one should approach it or stand on it and pray on it. So if there's no one else willing to purify that part of the, he must come back and purify it. Otherwise, it's the duty.
Or he can mark it by something, yes, like by covering it, for example, with
it,
a piece of cloth.
Down, something. And other people should also do the same job if they find the masjid impure. Maybe anyone else might have done it, may have made it impure. But those people who come to know that the masjid is impure, they should make it clean.
Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid. Let's take a short break, and then we'll be back and continue our program, Islamic Laws, on RIB English Radio. Don't go anywhere.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Welcome back to the program Islamic Laws on RIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker. We are talking about some of the Islamic laws of miscellaneous nature according to fatwas issued by Ayatollah Khamenei. Sheikh Javid, somebody asked, a father offers a gift of money to his minor child, depositing it on the child's behalf in a bank account. Is the interest, this is the question, is the interest that accrues to this deposited amount subject to khums? If so, is the father responsible for paying the khums that is due, or the child?
Well, this is a matter of controversy. I should say that the scholars are divided when it comes to who should pay khums and when the khums should be paid, right? Mm. According to the opinion of His Eminence Grand Ayatollah Khamenei, the khums obligation falls upon the child and not the father. Because it's the child's property and not that of the father. If the deposited money generates interest, then as a matter of mandatory precaution, khums should be paid on the interest if it remains in the child's possession until he reaches puberty. And we know that a child, as a child, when he has not attained puberty, is not supposed to pay khums, even if he has a lot of asset or wealth or whatever in his possession. Because a child who has not attained puberty is not under the obligation to do anything like prayer, fasting, and also khums and zakat, it's not necessary. And I should say that, the scholars are divided in this matter. For example, some other scholars say, no, it is necessary to pay khums on behalf of the child. Even if the child is a minor child, he has not attained puberty, it is the duty of the father to purify his property by giving one-fifth of that property as khums. Okay, but this is not the opinion of His Eminence Ayatollah Khamenei and many other scholars.
Because this is a gift?
When it comes to gift, also the scholars are divided. Yes. Ayatollah Sistani says that khums is not payable on khums should be paid on gift if it's not used within the first year.
Yeah.
But Ayatollah Khamenei says that no, khums is not paid on gift, on gifted items, whatever they are. But when if the gifted item, like gifted money, gifted amount of money, generates interest, then that interest is not gift. Mm. It is something generated by, as a result of keeping it or in that deposited account.
Yes.
And this is
or using it as an asset.
Yes. And so khums should be paid on it if it remains in the child's position until the age of puberty.
Right.
And when that child becomes baligh, attains puberty, then and then only, of course, it will be necessary on the child to pay khums on that interest.
I see. Thank you very much, Sheikh Javid, and really I appreciate it, you shedding light on these questions of Islamic laws on IRIB English Radio, where we invite you to come and you kindly accept our offers and invitation and shed light on these issues. Thank you, my dear audience, for listening to your own program, Islamic Laws, on IRIB English Radio, with me, Muhammad Jawad, the host of this program, and Sheikh Javid, our guest speaker, and the rest of the group, Bibi Jafar Wal, and we ask for your du'as for us, and remember us in your du'as. Thank you very much for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Hello, I'm Mubarak Kenya, and a big welcome to this week's edition of Africa Today.
Stay tuned with Africa Today.
Africa Today.
As the U.S. closes door, China is opening new ones and redefining Africa's place in the world. There is talk of the continent turning Trump's punitive tariffs into a new opportunity. Now, will Africa rise to reshape its destiny, or will it be left behind in the global power struggle? And joining us today to discuss this important topic is Irete Bakara Yusuf. Now, she is a broadcast journalist and founder of African Journalists Against Genocide. Also with us today is Zizwe Chiguka. Now, he is the organizer for the All African People's Revolutionary Party and the African Party for the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde. Join us for this week's edition of Africa Today as we discuss how African countries can turn Trump's punitive tariffs into an opportunity. When the United States raised tariffs on African exports to as high as 30% in the case of South Africa, shockwaves rippled across the continent. Overnight, billions in trade were at risk. Uganda, Gabon, and Niger had already lost their duty-free access under a U.S. program known as the African Growth and Opportunity Act. For many, it felt like punishment, but for Africa, it could be a wake-up call. Because while Washington is shutting doors, Beijing is opening them. By 2024, Africa-China trade had surged past $295 billion. In just the first 5 months of 2025, it added another $134 billion. Factories, ports, and railways financed by China are changing the way Africa connects with the world. At the same time, African nations are rethinking their own future. The African Continental Free Trade Area is laying the foundations for the world's largest single market. Across the continent, a new spirit of self-reliance is taking hold. Now, these tariffs aren't just about economics. They are moves in a global power struggle over currency, over alliances, over the future of trade itself. Now, the question is, will Africa turn exclusion into power and claim its place in the new multipolar world order?
Trump's tariffs, Africa's opportunity.
South African President Cyril Ramaphosa recently addressed a virtual BRICS leaders' extraordinary summit that focused on the current economic environment and the state of the multilateral system. Now, commenting on the tariffs war imposed by the U.S., he said that we are witnessing seismic shifts in global trade that present both challenges and opportunities. Let's take a listen.
We are witnessing seismic shifts in global trade that present both challenges as well as opportunities in the reordering of the global economy. There is a shift from a unipolar to a multipolar world. This moment is marked by intensifying global competition and growing geopolitical tensions. Unilateral tariff actions are contributing to an increasingly protectionist environment, which poses great hardships and danger for the countries of the Global South. The uncertainty of the new trading regime has already negatively affected employment levels in my own country, South Africa, and is an obstacle to our economic growth. We are therefore supportive of meaningful BRICS initiatives that improve the resilience of our economies as BRICS countries.
Well, the South African president, they are speaking of new opportunities for Africa amid the trade war imposed by the U.S. president on Africa. Now, let's start off with Irete Bakara Yusuf. Given the recent discussions surrounding the tariffs imposed on African exports by the U.S., do you believe Africa should view these as an opportunity to reduce its reliance on Western markets?
I think it's important that Africa begins to actually take control and steer and sort of pull away more and more from its dependency on Western markets. Why is that? Because Africa needs to realize the only way that Africa can grow is to continue or begin to do more and more business with the within themselves, within Africa, across the region, and, you know, pull away from the powers that the Western region had over Africa. Indeed, the only way we can actually begin to see a growth, and if you like, a Viva Africa, and a fully independent Africa, an Africa that works for Africans, and indeed her massive youth, is to actually continue to do business.
Thank you. Now, let's bring in Zizwe Chiguka. Do you think Africa's ongoing efforts to reduce reliance on the U.S. through initiatives like the African Continental Free Trade Area will help shield the continent from the impacts of a U.S. trade war?
The Africa Free Trade Agreement will definitely help to buffer the African nation states against the tariff policies of the current U.S. administration. Basically, because Africa is the richest continent on earth, and the economies of Africa, they need to be integrated so that they're not so dependent on foreign direct investment or foreign markets. Many of the nation states in Africa are dependent upon U.S. foreign market for sales. But if we integrate the economies of Africa, and the African Free Trade Agreement is a step in that direction, we will become less dependent upon the U.S. economy as a foreign market.
President Donald Trump's aggressive tariff policies, particularly the imposition of reciprocal tariffs of up to 50% on imports from countries with trade surpluses with the U.S., have significantly disrupted global trade dynamics. African nations heavily reliant on U.S. markets for exports like textiles, agriculture, and minerals have been among the most affected. In response, many are actively seeking new markets across Asia to mitigate the adverse economic impacts.
President Trump's recent decision to exempt key African minerals like gold, tungsten, uranium, and graphite from U.S. tariffs has raised questions about the underlying motives of these trade policies. Now, the administration justifies these exemptions as necessary to secure critical supply chains vital for sectors like aerospace, electronics, and energy. Now, Mr. Chiguka, how do you interpret this move?
The Trump administration could not put tariffs on those rare earth minerals because of the need for those rare earth minerals. It's the same thing in Africa. There are certain things, mineral resources, like uranium, coltan, et cetera. The administration in the U.S. cannot afford to put tariffs on those kinds of things because of the need. So they take people as fools, basically, when they have these economic arrangements and negotiations with other countries. And it's also a result of colonialism in the past in Africa that the U.S. government is able to bully people in Africa, the governments in Africa, in terms of making these arrangements to the detriment of the economy of the African nation states. So unification is the key. The integration of the African economy will stop all of those problems that the colonialists and imperialists are trying to impose on the African nation states.
Thanks for that, Mr. Chiguka. Let's now take a short break before we continue our discussion on punitive U.S. tariffs on Africa and how they can be turned into an opportunity for the continent. Stay with us.
Trump's tariffs, Africa's opportunity.
African Continental Free Trade Area stands as a cornerstone of Africa's development vision under Agenda 2063. Now, a unified market holds immense potential, unlocking boundless opportunities for the continent's growth and prosperity. The Secretary General of this Pan-African body elaborates on the opportunities.
By the year 2035, the AFCFTA market, the combined GDP of the AFCFTA market is estimated to be close to $7 trillion United States dollars. That means that there are opportunities for small medium enterprises, for young entrepreneurs to export across regions of the African continent and to take advantage of this vast market. However, if we don't have an integrated single market, we will not be able to achieve the positive projections that many around the world have made about the potential of the AFCFTA.
Well, as Africa continues to develop its economic strategies, initiatives like the African Continental Free Trade Area are undermining the U.S. Multilateral trade frameworks with Africa, such as the so-called African Growth and Opportunity Act, or AGOA. This is seen by many as presenting an opportunity for Africa to push for stronger economic integration within the continent itself. Ms. Bakare Yusuf, what are your thoughts on this?
Absolutely, it does. I mean, AGOA really, yes, Nigeria, my country, was one of the largest users, if not the largest users of AGOA, but, you know, that no longer exists. And again, AGOA was just a way of, you know, it was the American soft power way of controlling African countries. So certainly we should get away. And I can't say, I can honestly say for myself, I am one of those who sees this as a great, great opportunity for Africa to free itself of the American stronghold. But the question is Africa ready? They need our resources. The same President Trump that's imposing tariffs on South Africa, on Nigeria, etc., that's weaponizing tariffs, is actually then in the rare earth. He's talking about, oh, I'm stopping the war in Congo, you know, in exchange for natural resources. Well, he hasn't even stopped any war, but I have no doubt he's probably signed the natural resource on how to steal from Congo, how to steal from Sudan, how to steal from Nigeria. Heck, how to steal from as many parts of Africa as possible. And those are the things that we need to stop from happening. If African countries had led the initiative and ensured that the war in Congo, the genocide going on, is actually stopped and they're able to get there and stop it, talk to their brother leaders, put a stop to it, then we wouldn't have had a President Trump who would be able to interlude and claim that he stopped a war, which he hasn't stopped. And must keep saying that he hasn't stopped. What he did was to sign a contract to collect more minerals, to steal, not collect, to actually thieve and steal more minerals from Africa in the future, in order to tell to do a ceasefire that only lasted a few days.
The exclusion of African countries from AGOA presents a significant new opportunity for the continent to reconsider and potentially break free from trade agreements that may have restricted its long-term growth and potential. Now, Mr. Chibuka, how has AGOA's narrow focus on specific industries and reliance on external partners hindered the continent's ability to diversify its economies and pursue more self-sustaining models of development?
Definitely think that this is an opportunity for Africa to unify economically, politically, socially. On the economic front, the African Growth and Opportunities Act was a thing that was used by the imperialist powers to keep a dependency relationship of these newly independent African states. So this would work in our favor to spark a change in Africa to further integrate the African economy. And so the U.S. administration is helping to mobilize our people to for greater forms, levels of unity on the economic front. So it's a good thing. It's a good thing that they are actually trying to impose these tariffs. So now we can integrate our economies and be less dependent on the African Growth and Opportunities Act, which is to the disfavor of the African nation states anyway.
China's expanding influence in Africa represents a significant shift from the historically exploitative engagement of Western powers, particularly the United States. Many analysts view the increasing trade between China and African nations as a constructive alternative to the punitive tariffs often associated with U.S. economic policy.
There's a China-Africa summit every year in which the Chinese forgive the debt of many African nation states. And also China has helped to build infrastructure projects throughout Africa, such as the Trans-Am Railroad back in the 70s. So that relationship with China has always been a positive and is increasingly becoming even better with their help financially and economically, so that we are less dependent upon the U.S. and the European imperialists that charge astronomical interest rates on these loans that they give us. Because if you look at all the nation states in Africa that have taken out International Monetary Fund loans, they're still paying the interest and they can't even get to the principal. So therefore, the indebtedness of African nation states to IMF is continuing to rise, whereas China is helping and forgives many of the loans so that we can become less dependent on the International Monetary Fund in Africa.
In response to the U.S.'s aggressive trade policy, there is a growing argument for African countries to focus on de-dollarization and create more independent trade structures within the global south. Now, Mr. Chibuka, how can de-dollarization and the establishment of independent trade structures help African countries mitigate the impact of external economic pressures such as an aggressive trade policy from the U.S.
Therefore, it is incumbent upon Africa to take this opportunity to break away from the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar was the reserve currency and is steadily declining in terms of nation states that are dependent on the U.S. dollar. So this is an opportunity for Africa to become less dependent and use the mechanism of de-dollarization through the BRICS Alliance and other mechanisms, so that when the U.S. dollar declines, finally, it won't affect Africa as much. It won't be as disruptive, because the handwriting is on the wall for the U.S. dollar. It is declining on a global scale, and the African nations have to be able to adjust, or they will go down if they keep dependency on the U.S. dollar. Therefore, de-dollarization is a must in Africa.
South Africa has been hit hard by the Trump tariffs. The ANC-led coalition government has struggled to respond effectively. While some critics argue that South Africa's response lacked urgency or forcefulness, especially given the economic stakes, Pretoria has clearly taken diplomatic and strategic steps.
Ms. Bakare Yusuf will have the last word today. Now, what steps should African governments take to ensure that they are better prepared for such economic shocks in future?
We wait, like I said earlier, we wait on until the problem lands in our country, slaps us in the face before we start to respond. Why isn't there anybody looking to the future and planning? That is what African countries must do. African leaders must start to look, visionize a really strong and independent Africa, and continue to plan, not just plan, implement, not just implement, create the structure, the framework, the foundation to build that vision on. But you can't do that again if you don't invest in your education. So now we come to social structure. You've got to invest in your education because you have to be ready to pass on the baton to the next generation. Yet again, we've got the likes of Paul Biya who are wanting to run again and again and again. So the youth, of course, they feel despondent. They're in despair. They don't see a future.
Well, there you have it. Africa needs to have visionary leaders and invest in education for the continent to be free of manipulation
by the likes of Trump. I'd like to thank our guests today, Ireti Bakari Yusuf and Zizwe Chuguka, for their incisive analysis. Now let's proceed to the next part of our program, honoring Africa's remarkable civilizations, which are the cornerstone of its vibrant cultural legacy. In today's fast-evolving world, it's increasingly important for young Africans to reconnect with their heritage. Now, preserving this identity is key to shaping a confident and empowered future. My colleague, Jana Tali, will share more on this.
Hello, I'm Janet Ali, and welcome to a series of programs that will delve into some of the ancient African civilizations. As Africa moves to become a focal point of the world's economy, reflecting on the continent's rich civilization is critical to preserve its pure identity. Today, let us get to know more about the Songhai civilization. Songhai Empire, one of the largest and most powerful civilizations in West African history. This civilization emerged in the 15th century and was centered around the Niger River. The empire's capital was the city of Gao, but it's also included other significant cities like Timbuktu and Djenne. The rise of the Songhai Empire began under the leadership of Sunni Ali in the 1460s. Sunni Ali expanded the empire's territories through military conquests and established control over crucial trade routes. His successor, Askia Muhammad, further centralized the administration, promoting Islam and implementing a legal system based on Islamic law. Under Askia Muhammad's rule, the empire experienced a golden age marked by political stability, economic prosperity, and cultural flourishing. The Songhai Empire's achievements were numerous. Timbuktu and Djenne became renowned centers of learning, attracting scholars and students from across the Islamic world. The empire's wealth was built on trans-Saharan trade, dealing in gold, salt, and other valuable commodities. The Songhai military was also formidable, utilizing cavalry and riverine forces to maintain control over their vast territories. However, the decline of the Songhai Empire began in the late 16th century. Internal strife and succession disputes weakened the central authority. In 1591, the Moroccan army invaded the Songhai Empire equipped with firearms, which gave them a significant advantage over the Songhai forces. The Battle of Tondibi marked the end of Songhai dominance, and the empire gradually fragmented into smaller states. Despite its decline, the legacy of Songhai civilization still endures. Efforts to preserve the heritage of the Songhai include protecting historical sites like the Sankore Madrasa in Timbuktu, a UNESCO World Heritage Site. Timbuktu's ancient manuscripts, which contain invaluable knowledge on various subjects, are being digitized and preserved to safeguard the cultural and intellectual achievements of the Songhai era. That was a brief description of the Songhai civilization. From me, Janet Ali, it's goodbye for now.
Well, and that brings us to the end of this week's edition of Africa Today. It's always great having you. On behalf of the entire crew, it's me, Mubarak Kenya, saying goodbye for now.
bustle of life. The sound of living. Only sound will endure. IRIB English Radio. Let's recite the Quran.
وَإِذَا قَرَأْتَ الْقُرْآنَ جَعَلْنَا بَيْنَكَ وَبَيْنَ الَّذِينَ لَا يُؤْمِنُونَ بِالْآخِرَةِ حِجَابًا مَسْتُورًا
الْقُرْآنُ نُورٌ وَبَيَانٌ الْقُرْآنُ هَدْيُ الْإِيمَانِ الْقُرْآنُ مِسْكُ الْخِتَامِ
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجه
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, respected brothers and sisters, dear listeners, listening to IRIB English Radio right now from all over the world. Welcome to Let's Recite the Quran in Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. I'm Habibullah Fasihzadeh, together with brothers Ali Nasir, Hassan Nasrullah, Hussein Ruhullah, and Muhammad Masum, right? So everyone is here. I really welcome you all. Inshallah, today we will practice Ayah 31, verse number 31, Surah Al-Ra'd on page 253, right?
Yes.
Yes. This is a very long ayah, so we will just go to the tajweed points and also the recitation. Inshallah, I really want you to go for the explanation and the tafsir points. Refer to the tafsir books and learn about them, okay? All right?
Yes.
Yes.
So, everyone, first and foremost, let's listen to a beautiful recitation of this ayah. Let's go.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Walau anna Qur'anan suyirat bihil jibalu aw qutti'at bihil ardu aw kullima bihil mawta bal lillahi al-amru jami'a. أَفَلَمْ يَيْأَسِ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَنْ لَوْ يَشَاءُ اللَّهُ لَهَدَى النَّاسَ جَمِيعًا وَلَا يَزَالُ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا تُصِيبُهُمْ بِمَا صَنَعُوا قَارِعَةٌ أَوْ تَحُلُّ قَرِيبًا مِنْ دَارِهِمْ أو تحل قريبا من دارهم حتى يأتي وعد الله إن الله لا يخلف الميعاد.
And if there was any Quran by which the mountains would be removed, or the earth would be broken apart, or the dead would be made to speak, it would be this Quran. But to Allah belongs the affair entirely. Then have those who believed not accepted that had Allah willed, He would have guided the people, all of them. And those who disbelieve do not cease to be struck for what they have done by calamity, or it will descend near their home until there comes the promise of Allah. Indeed, Allah does not fail in His promise.
Nice recitation, mashallah, mashallah. Okay, I will read this ayah once. Listen. A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir rahmanir rahim. ولو أن قرآنا سيرت به الجبال أو قطعت به الأرض أو كلم به الموتى بل لله الأمر جميعا أفلم ييأس الذين آمنوا أن لو يشاء الله لهدى الناس جميعا ولا يزال الذين كفروا تصيبهم بما صنعوا قارعة أو تحل قريبا من دارهم حتى يأتي وعد الله إن الله لا يخلف الميعاد. The explanation of this ayah is super beautiful. I really recommend you refer to the Tafsir books, inshallah. So, guys, who wants to recite this ayah once? Like, Masum, recite it. So, with your recitation, okay, I'll explain this. Go on. Listen, everyone.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
أحسنتم.
ولو أن قرآنا سيرت به الجبال أو قطعت به الأرض أو كلم به الموتى.
أحسنتم. ولو أن we have mentioned it time and again that whenever noon carries a shadda or meme has a shadda, you have to extend the sound and also pronounce it with a nasal sound. أن ولو أن قرآنا سيرت قرآنا سيرت. How do you read this?
قرآنا سيرت.
نان سيرت. إخفاء, right?
Yes. إخفاء.
قرآنا سيرت. Make sure سيرت. T sound of ta shouldn't be there. It shouldn't be pronounced this way. سيرت به ال... No, not sound, no. سيرت به ال... Okay? جبال أو قط قط قطعت به الأر أر أر ضو أر like a heavy sound with را تفخيم الرا أرض أو كلم به الموتى حسن معصوم stopped here he made a pause here right at the word موتى was he allowed to make a pause here
yes
what does that station tell us the قلا that sign
قلا says it's better to make a pause
Better to make a pause. Good job.
But you can continue.
You can continue. You're right. You can continue. Okay. بل لله الأمر جميعا. بل لله. بل لله. بل لله. Yes. You join them. بل لله. بل لله الأمر جميعا. He pronounced it جميعا. The reciter. Yes. Minshawi. جميعا. Ah, so recite it once.
بل لله الأمر جميعا.
أحسنتم. So تنوين فتحة. Whenever you end on a word having تنوين فتحة, you change it to
ألف ما.
ألف ما جميعا فتحة on the last letter, which is عين with an ألف جميعا. That's why you have an ألف there.
Yes.
So move on. أفلم.
أَفَلَمْ يَيْأَسِ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَنْ لَوْ يَشَاءُ اللَّهُ لَهَدَى النَّاسَ جَمِيعًا
أحسنتم أَفَلَمْ يَيْ Do you see there is a ساكن, a sukun sign on the ألف يَيْأَسِ
Yes
So that sukun sign on ألف tells you that this ألف is silent Don't read it
mm-hmm.
You don't say يَيْ No يَيْ يَيْأَسِ So, يَيْأَسِ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا أَنْ لَوْ How do you say this? You merge them, yes?
أَنْ
لَوْ Not أَنْ لَوْ أَنْ لَوْ يَشَاءَ The mud is?
واجب.
A wajib mud. You have to extend it for six counts, four, five, six counts. أَنْ لَوْ يَشَاءُ اللَّهُ اللَّهُ Heavy sound. لَهَدَى النَّاسَ Again, noon with shadda. جَمِيعًا جَمِيعًا Move on.
ولا يزال الذين كفروا تصيبهم بما صنعوا قارعة أو تحل قريبا من دارهم
أحسنتم ولا يزال الذين كفروا تصيبهم ميم ساكن ends with a ميم ساكن and the next letter is ب إخفاء with the letter ميم تصيبهم بما not تصيبهم بما do not pronounce ميم correct like completely
yes.
fully بما صنعوا قارعة أو تحل قارعة أو this is called the rule إظهار right
yes.
قارعة أو you completely clearly pronounce the تن the تنوين
قرآني نبض حياتي قرآني طهر ذاتي قرآني عصمة أمري قرآني طوق نجاتي قرآني نبض حياتي
How to learn Quran easy? What is the correct way to read the Quran? What is the correct way to learn Arabic and understand the Quran? Be with Let's Recite the Quran.
أو تحل قريبا من دارهم. How do you say this? قريبا من. أحسن. قريبا من. This is called إخفاء دارهم. Alright, move on. أو تحل
قريبا من دارهم حتى يأتي وعد الله.
أحسنتم. Move on. Oh, wait. That gym indicates that
Jim allows us to make a pause.
Okay.
Inna Allah la yukhlifu al-mi'ad.
Ahsantum. The dal at the end will be changed to a sakin dal. Yeah, mi'ad becomes mi'ad. You have to echo the sound. That's it. Super easy. Too many rules, but they all are easy. I will recite this ayah once. Let's practice the recitation. That will be the last part of our class. Everyone ready?
Yes.
Brothers
yes.
and sisters, hope you join our recitation. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
ولو أن قرآنا سيرت به الجبال أو قطعت به الأرض أو كلم به الموتى
ولو أن قرآنا سيرت به الجبال أو قطعت به الأرض أو كلم به الموتى
بل لله الأمر جميعا أفلم ييأس الذين آمنوا أن لو يشاء الله لهدى الناس جميعا
أفلم ييأس الذين آمنوا أن لو يشاء الله لهدى الناس جميعا
ولا يزال الذين كفروا تصيبهم بما صنعوا قارعة أو تحل قريبا من دارهم
ولا يزال الذين كفروا تصيبهم بما صنعوا قارعة أو تحل قريبا من دارهم
أو تحل قريبا من دارهم حتى يأتي وعد الله
أو تحل قريبا من دارهم
حتى يأتي وعد الله
إن الله لا